From the Spec Network, this is Fragmented, an Android developer podcast where we talk about building good software and becoming better Android developers. I'm Don Felker.
And I'm Kaushik Gopal.
Welcome to the show.
Happy New Year, folks. A highly requested topic last year was React Native. People have asked us what we thought about it. Should we maybe start using it now? Is it time? Should we not use it? But given that React Native is still so new, we thought it best to first talk to the experts and learn more about it. That's exactly what Don does in this episode that he recorded at Microsoft Connect. He talks to Ryan Salva, who's credited as being one of the major thought leaders in this space currently. He's incredibly smart, funny, and we learn a whole bunch about the state of the React Native world from this one. Enjoy the show! Before we begin today's show, I want to take a quick moment and thank our sponsor, Mapbox. We're really excited to have them on as a sponsor this year. But what is Mapbox? Mapbox is the location data platform that enables developers to go off and build their app experiences. Now, you may think, why would I need something like Mapbox? If you ask me, one thing, customizable map experiences. As an Android developer, especially one working on an app that has to customize the map experience, I don't want to settle for, you know, a default same app no matter what you do option. I want to tailor the map view that I show my users so it meets their specific need when using my app. Mapbox offers complete map design control. With just a few lines of code, you can display accurate turn-by-turn driving, walking and biking navigation, real-time traffic. They basically handle location so we can just focus on building our app. And that's exactly the kind of service that we all need in our lives. Many companies and developers already integrate Mapbox today in their Android apps. I know, because we use them here at Instacart too. Just head on over to mapbox.com/android. Sign up there and the first 50,000 unique mobile users is completely free. So you can try it out to your heart's content. And after that, they have a completely reasonable pay-as-you-go model. We're thrilled to have them on as a sponsor and we want to thank them for sponsoring today's show.
Okay, I'm sitting here with Ryan J. Salva from Microsoft, and he's going to talk to us about React Native. Welcome to the show, Ryan.
Hey, thanks, buddy. Really, really excited to be here. I truly appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thank you for taking the time. For folks that aren't familiar with you, if you could give us just a little bit of background information about who you are, maybe kind of how you got into Microsoft and your role and so forth?
Oh, sure. Yeah, totally. So I've been with Microsoft for about 5 years. I came to Microsoft after really actually kind of building up my own consulting agency and running it and building it to a decent size over the course of about 8 years. But I've always been a JavaScript developer, frankly. Okay. I know this is a JavaScript podcast, right?
But I am a fan of JavaScript. So people maybe, some Java and Kotlin developers may be wincing when they're driving down the road right now. But no, I think it's
What sweet hell did I wander into here? No, so I was
we'll be nice.
I was a JavaScript developer, and Microsoft brought me on at the time when they were really building out Windows 8. Mm-hmm. And you may remember at the time Microsoft was really trying to elevate JavaScript to be kind of a first class language for desktop and mobile development, and they didn't really have a whole lot of people who were kind of like deeply experienced in the way that JavaScript was happening outside of the Microsoft bubble, right? Because there's a huge world out there that is not on the Microsoft stack, right? And so they brought in a few people, me being one of them, to help kind of educate them. And I think, you know, we made some good choices. We made some bad choices. But ultimately, I kind of continued that role as a kind of a JavaScript product developer or product manager in Microsoft, spending a little bit of time with Cordova development, which also deploys out to Android, right? Mm-hmm. And then eventually, as React Native kind of was, you know, kind of came into being, I don't know, 2.5 years ago or so.
Yeah.
I kind of switched over to React Native because I saw that, while, don't get me wrong, I love all the work that we did with Cordova development, the next real wave of cross-platform mobile development was really going to be with native UI, native UX, just the characteristics of Cordova. It was meant to be a bridge to give you device capabilities in a browser And a browser has a very specific kind of experience, and a mobile app has a very specific yeah. kind of experience, right? And so React Native really kind of like I saw as being the future of mobile development using JavaScript. So yeah. I've been doing that for the last few years.
So that's what the exact reason why I wanted to talk to you today was React Native. A lot of folks on the podcast and even in my consulting career, one of the first questions I'm always asked is like, well, should we do this app in React Native or should we go regular Android and iOS native? And it's always one of those things where I kind of have to evaluate the question. And this was early on the React Native. And now this question is kind of getting the answer to it is kind of more blurred anymore. Like, well, you could kind of do it in either one of them. But the thing is, to be 100% honest, I'm not a React Native expert by any means. I've only toyed with it. So I want to sit down and talk with someone who has actually been down into the guts of the system and have built some apps to talk about what it's like to build a React Native app. And how do you go about approaching it? I mean, I have so many questions about, you know, all different kinds of things.
All right. Well, let's, so you kind of started there by saying, should I build it using React Native?
Yeah.
All right. Uh-huh. Let's take a couple of level setting things because I want to scope it because there are applications that are well suited for React Native.
That's
and
perfect.
There are applications that have really no business being implemented in React Native.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So we'll get some of the obvious ones out of the way. If it's a like first person shooter game, something like that, like forget about it. Not even going to happen. Right. So don't go there.
Okay. No games. Got it.
If, one of the big reasons that you might want to choose React Native will likely be the composition of your team and the skills that they bring to the table.
Okay.
What I tend to find is, especially for the smaller apps that are out there, the indie developers, mm-hmm. right? If they've got a small team and they're going to have to be building both the mobile backend services and the client side services, there is a lot of goodness that you get out of being able to use the same language, both client side and backend side, right? That doesn't mean you're using the same code in both places. It's just, it's easier.
Just shared, no, less context switching. I'm not writing in Ruby and then I'm writing in whatever.
Yeah, exactly, right? And then I would say that while React Native does allow you to customize for Android UI and then iOS UI, and there's like a lot of affordances there.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got an app that has a relatively simple layout that allows you to kind of leverage some of the kind of nice adaptations between iOS and Android,
mm-hmm.
so simpler UIs tend to do better. Again, it doesn't mean that you can't fully customize all of the UI separately
for
iOS
platform.
And Android, right?
Okay.
You can totally do that. It's just the code sharing benefits that you get out of it start to diminish the more that you need to fork the code to the two different platforms. Does that
makes sense.
Okay, fantastic. Okay, so now that we got like an idea of, okay, we're looking for an app that is going to have a similar workflow between iOS and Android, we probably are coming to the table with some JavaScript skills and hopefully even with some React.js skills because React doesn't always smell, taste, feel exactly like traditional JavaScript.
Okay.
Either, right? So once you're there, really the choice is going to be like, it's, let me tell you the things it's not going to be about. Probably not going to be about performance, right?
Okay.
Because in the end, a React Native app and all the tests that I've done, it tends to look almost exactly like an Android app or an iOS in terms of perf characteristics. The startup time is a little bit longer.
What do you mean by a little bit?
By a little bit. I mean like 100 to 250 milliseconds.
Okay.
Kind of for a standard one, right? Not crazy town, but like there's
not
a little bit.
Not 2 to 10 seconds, but we're milliseconds.
Okay. You're talking definitely sub-second and even then sub-500 milliseconds.
Okay.
Thing, right? But because the UI that is rendered is ultimately just the native controls. It is all 100% the native controls.
So if I have Android, it's, right. I'm getting an Android button. I'm getting
you
Android
are getting
text
an Android button. There is not a pixel renderer in sight, right?
Okay.
The job of the React Native framework is really just to create a mapping between a JavaScript control and an Android control. And so it's just making a translation that, hey, this button here written in JavaScript is a button controlled over in Android.
So it's just kind of bridging that stuff over a little bit.
It's really all it's doing, right? Okay. So performance doesn't need to be too much of a concern.
So it's not like a web view. So I'm not like when I click,
oh,
you got that web view thing. You click on a button and it's like, when is is this thing going to depress? And you press it three. I'm pushing on my hand here. So
for those of you on Radio Land,
I'm pushing on my hand like it's a, like a screen. And you know how you get those weird, like finally it clicks and all of a sudden like it goes to three other pages somehow, but it's not like that.
Yeah, I can, I can go deep on that particular problem. But yes, it is not that. There is absolutely not a web view in here. Okay. I mean, you could bring in a web view if you wanted to. But that is not React Native. Okay. Like, that is not React Native. React Native is rendering the native UX.
Okay.
So typically when you're building a React Native app, the vast majority of your shared code is in that kind of, core business logic, as it were.
Okay.
Right? That is, you know, roughly speaking, 70% of your code. And then when you build up your kind of your typical React Native app, you are building a, kind of a main view for iOS and Android, right? So you will actually have separate components that you build out for each one of the views. Again, the more that you can have a similar workflow and a similar pattern between the two, great. That's more code sharing for you, right? Okay. But basically you just create like an index.ios.js, index.android.js. And that by convention lets you know, hey, you're now building out separate UI for each of the independent platforms.
Would you recommend folks that are doing this? You said for code sharing, and I talked to Gabriel Peel from Airbnb a couple months ago at DroidCon. And he said that their team came up with a common design language that they used in both Android and iOS. So each apps look the same. Is that something that kind of helped facilitate more code sharing?
Oh, yeah. Basically, what they've built out, and by the way, like, I want to give huge props and like shout out to that engineering team. I know several of the guys over there. That is like that they have one of the most amazing React Native engineering teams the world amazing. Around. Okay. I mean, they are certainly leading the industry right there side by side with Facebook and Microsoft in terms of innovating in the React Native space. I have huge respect for them.
Awesome.
But that aside, essentially what they're doing is they're building out a component library that they can draw from. And that way they can ensure consistent kind of UX controls across all the different components. And they've also like within, well, this is the case with all mobile development, but it gets a little bit dicey, particularly within the React Native world, the animation libraries that you end up having to build out because of the way that the components, kind of load in data and unload that data. It can get a little bit dicey to work with animation. And so building out like really, really sophisticated animation libraries, especially for an app like Airbnb that depends so much upon those little micro interactions, right? The, you know, thoughtful little gestures and animations and transitions.
Yeah, the transition. Yeah.
That's where kind of really all of the, kind of like a lot where their IP and component libraries is. And fortunately, they've actually open sourced all of that. So we're all free to borrow from that and benefit from the good work that they've done. But that is one of the areas where it gets a little bit more complicated.
So for real. Okay. Excellent. We've determined maybe we're writing some type of application. It's not a first person shooter. It's not a game. We're stepping away from that. When we're building a React Native application, of course, you got to know a little bit of React. We went off and learned some of that stuff. Now, from a project perspective, I'm thinking of this kind of like in little boxes. My React Native project, and I'm coming at this from a complete noob standpoint.
Sure, yeah.
Do I have a kind of like, I'm going to call it a library. It's probably the wrong term. Down at the bottom, that's all my shared stuff. And then I have like another library that's for Android, another for iOS. So there's three different pieces with the shared stuff on the bottom. Or is it just kind of a file that's a shell that things are rendered to?
I mean, you basically have a nested component tree. Typically, you're going to share the vast majority of your kind of business logic in one of those subcomponents.
Okay.
And then as you get up to higher levels, right, and into the UI, then you're going to start to fork off, right? So imagine it as, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an awkward metaphor here. I don't know. Two mountains resting on a valley, right? Like there's like, you know, your shared code is that valley and each of the two mountains are your different, iOS and Android platforms, right? They sit on the same kind of plot of earth and plot of ground, but at some point they do fork off and have their own kind of implementations.
Okay.
And this is all for the benefit of allowing you to kind of like customize the UI for the native platforms. This is one of, I said earlier that I'd worked on Cordova for quite a while, right? This is one of the kind of the real challenges that Cordova always had. Yes, there were the performance characteristics problems, but even more so than that, it was the common UI bridging across both platforms, right? Things, even if they were, whether they were slow or not, they still looked kind of like, you know, a web button on both iOS and Android. And we as consumers, as users of mobile phones, have come to expect that, like, you know, the design language of the platform is what carries through to the apps that we build.
Yeah,
right. It does, this is kind of bleeds through. And so being able to kind of fork off and create kind of design patterns that map back to the native platform become essential and critical.
Which kind of leads me to this one is when, let's say I start up a React Native project.
Yeah.
Do I automatically out of the gate, do I get support for both iOS and Android, or do I have to choose one path to go down or both paths, or what's that look like from a developer's perspective?
By default, it is cross-platform.
Okay.
So, I mean, while it doesn't take a lot of effort, you just delete the index.ios.js, right? And you essentially neuter it for that particular platform. But by default, it is intended to be cross-platform.
Okay.
And so, you know, what you'll typically find is that when someone kind of builds out a React Native app, I talked earlier about, you know, being able to use JavaScript on both the server side and the, and the client side. Another reason that I find, you know, both in my own development and the developers that I talk with that they end up adopting it is that it allows them to get to market that much faster for both of the platforms. It boggles my mind that we are required to essentially, like, as a developer, it offends my sensibilities that I have to write redundant code for two platforms, right?
Yeah.
That I have to write essentially the exact same function, the exact same object once for Android and again for iOS with very little difference between the two except for syntax, right?
Yeah, I agree. This is the problem I face as a consultant all the time. I was just on a call earlier this week with an iOS engineer at one of my clients. We're working through a problem with one of the backend engineers. And I'm asking him, all right, well, what JSON are you looking at? Well, I'm grabbing this JSON. All right, well, what are you doing with it?
Yeah.
And it's like, we're doing the exact same thing. And it actually looks the same on the screen because we're kind of trying to use the same design language. But in my head, I'm like, we're doing this twice. This feels so wrong.
Yeah.
And I think now you touched on a very important point there, and it's faster to market. And so I have a very entrepreneurial sense about me when I go work for clients. I want to get things out there as soon as possible. I don't want the code to be perfect. I'll do the best that I can, but I don't even know if this feature is worth spending a lot of time in. So let's do it good enough. Let's get it out there, test it. And if it works, cool, then we can kind of improve on it and iterate.
Well, and frankly, for you as a consultant, like, it gives you a bit of a advantage potentially over kind of the next agency that's out there who says, like, hey, you know, for, you know, 30% less money, I can get you to market faster for both platforms.
And that's huge.
And then now you've got a competitive advantage right there out in the market.
And getting to market is huge for it doesn't matter if you're an enterprise company, it doesn't matter if you're a startup. It's just being able to get that stuff out there is humongous. And the faster that you can do it, the bigger of an edge you're going to have.
Well, since we're talking about faster time to market, this is actually one of the other areas where I think that React Native really shines, right? It's not just about getting to market that first time, right? We spend the vast majority of our time as developers not building V1 of the product, right? We spend it on 1.2, 2.8, 2.9.
Reading the code again. What is this doing?
Right. Exactly. Right. So there's a couple nice things about the way that, kind of React Native works. Number one, because you've got a really, really isolated component model, right? Where it is possible because you're just kind of passing state from one view to the next and each component is entirely encapsulated kind of within itself, right? It is much easier for you to work with I won't even call it, it can be distributed teams, but it can be just you and the guy next to you, right? Mm-hmm. And you both can go to town, jam on your particular view, and the contract between your view and your coworker's view is really just that model, right?
Just the state, data model, yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so you don't have to really like build up among your team an architectural view of what the entire application looks like. There's a lot less, it's not just collaboration required, but coordination required, mm-hmm. right? In order for you to make sure that, hey, I'm, you know, calling the right method over here and this one over here. You guys can actually build out those components very, very independently and then just kind of merge it all together into the build at the end. And because you're encapsulated within that component, not worry so much about it bumping up against or breaking a contract with mm-hmm. kind of an adjacent view, mm-hmm. right? So that's one thing. It allows teams to collaborate, right? Or to work towards a common goal without having to worry so much about breaking contracts between each other. All right. That's number one. Number two. So as you are kind of trying to iterate on your application, it's not just kind of like going and getting your app out to market the first time, but it's also how quickly can you release updates after that, right? Mm-hmm. Because those updates, not only are they doing things like fixing problems for your customers, right? For your users, but they're also enabling you to learn more quickly, right? If I can release 4 updates in a day, right? I'm going to learn a lot more quickly than the other developer out there who can release an update, you know, maybe one a day or mm-hmm. one every 4 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Now, the kind of the Android ecosystem and the kind of Google Play Store is way better about this. They make it a lot easier to publish quickly.
Yeah.
It is maybe a little bit more idiosyncratic of the iOS ecosystem, but an important one nevertheless, where sending those updates out there is really just a pain in the derriere, to mm-hmm. put it very politely, right? It can take days or even weeks sometime, especially with like a big update or a big yeah. push, right? And so one of the interesting things about React Native is that it enables you to update your application really without having to go through the app store at all.
So what do you mean by that? Because I thought it was all compiled.
this is where you kind of get into the weird magic of React Native.
Let's hear more. I want to hear more about this. This sounds interesting.
So here's how things are working. In a React Native application, yes, there's a portion of your code that is 100% compiled.
Again, a portion. Okay. So it's not all.
It's not the whole thing.
Okay.
Because in the end, the JavaScript that's executing, that JavaScript doesn't get compiled to native code. That JavaScript stays as JavaScript.
So essentially it's loose
web tile. So the React Native framework itself, okay. which does the translation between the JavaScript and the kind of the native components, okay. right?
To the buttons and the views and
yeah, whatever. Yeah. And then any of the other kind of native packages that you brought in to, you know, you can
view
leverage
pagers and the calendar yeah, things
exactly,
and stuff like that.
Exactly. Right? Any of that stuff is going to get compiled, but your kind of your core JavaScript that you write, anything that you're writing in JavaScript stays as a JavaScript package in here, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the app stores in their kind of wisdom have seen fit to allow developers to update loose files, uncompiled code to their heart's content, right? This allows us to be able to, you know, load in a web view, right?
For
Yelp or an image or whatever.
Yeah, right? Your avatar changes and yeah. you wanted to update. Oh, yeah, you should just go to Gravatar or wherever you're loading it to, and it should download the new
one. Excellent example. Perfect example, right? Mm-hmm. So that JavaScript package that you've got kind of living there in JavaScript core, mm-hmm. right? That guy, by license restriction, is allowed to be updated dynamically.
Okay.
Right? And so if you can update all of your business logic and even all of your views, because your views are themselves defined in JavaScript. Right. All of your layout, all of your styling, all that good kind of stuff is defined in JavaScript itself. Okay. It's actually kind of a weird munging of JavaScript that looks kind of like CSS, but it's not. It's JavaScript. So what you can do is you can essentially query a server and say, hey, like, do you have an update available? And this can be on any event. It can be on app resume, or it can be on app start, or it can be when you click a button that says check
for
update.
Could be on one particular screen that you want to do something.
Yeah,
on.
Okay. One particular screen. It could be on anything.
Okay.
Right?
Just an HTTP request, actually.
Just an HTTP. Yeah, just a RESTful API.
Okay.
And that RESTful API goes up to a server and says, hey, Mr. Server, do you have any new code for me? What's your latest version?
And that's going to be implemented by you or your backend team or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. Exactly. And so if Mr. Server says, yep, totally, got an update. It's 2.4.1 and your application says, oh, I've only got 2.4.0, then what you can do is you can download that JavaScript package, unpack it, unzip it, replace your previous JavaScript, and then bada bing, bada boom, you've got an update, and like took no time at all. Now, sometimes you want to manage the user experience of that.
Yeah. Right? So that's what I wonder. Like if I'm going to download something and I've got compiled, and this is right, I think where my, I'm having a disconnect here. I have some compiled code and I guess that's the libraries or whatever I'm using the widgets and so forth. And I download a screen and it's going to reformat and change how the screen looks completely.
Could even do that. Yeah.
So that's what I worry about. Is there a point in which I might break something that I have to release a new update to my app? At what point does that need to happen?
I mean, like, yes, we, as developers, we are always empowered to break things. That is our God-given right. We can break things, right? So yes, you can absolutely break things. What you do need to be a little bit careful of where things can get a little bit dicey is if you have multiple kind of RESTful APIs or multiple mobile backend versions that go up against multiple versions of your end market product.
Okay.
That is not a problem that is unique to React Native. That is something. It's just that the ability to deliver updates more quickly and more often tends to compound the problem a little bit.
Gotcha.
Right?
Kind of exposes it a little bit.
Exposes it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Right? You also want to make sure that you manage the user experience of that update. You don't want someone to be, you know, navigating around on your app and then all of a sudden it decides that it wants to update the UI and everything on them and
turns off.
Turns off, does whatever, right? That can be distracting, right? So be responsible kind of UX developers.
So that's a good question there. So you do have that. You've went through the process now. You've got one up to your server. You download that 2.4.1 package.
Yeah.
You brought it down locally. What does that look like from, I mean, we're kind of getting into the weeds here, but what does that look
like?
I
love the weeds. Weeds are great. Weeds are great.
What does that look like from a technical perspective? Do I have to go look for that file? Does React Native automatically say, hey, there's a new update. I'll apply it. Or how does that whole process work?
So this is actually where things get a little bit complicated. And I'm going to make them complicated and then I'm going to make them simple.
I like that.
Right? All right. So React Native does none of this for you. What you would essentially do is you would have to build out all of the logic that says, you know, first, hey, server, do you have a new version. Okay. Now download it. Now you're going to have to unzip it. Now you're going to have to take your previous directory, move it to something like local cache. Because you don't want to like dump it because then people are in a really bad state where they can't recover from it. Now put in the files into the new location, you know, give developers some kind of exit. If things really, really like get totally screwed up, that it reloads the local cache from the original one. Because what you're going to really want to do is if the app doesn't start up, you want to revert back to the old one, right? And then you might even want to be able to like build out more sophisticated features like
report back reporting for crash. Hey, this upgrade didn't work.
Exactly. This upgrade didn't work. So therefore stop delivering 2.4.1 to the rest of your customers. There's lots of like really a lot of kind of outside cases that become really, really important to make sure that you've taken care of.
But just the fact that you can do that to me is, I mean, the fact that that hook to download an update to your app without having to go to the app store is like, was this panacea that never existed for me. And that was my, one of the big things I've had. I still have a problem with the apps is I may update an app and it's 100 megs for whatever reason. And I have to update it and I don't know when the users are going to get it. Did they turn on automatic updates? If they did, is it going to be tonight they get it? Or when are they going to be connected again? If it's not automatic, who knows how long I'm going to have to support this version. So being able to do this.
But now you can also like you said, did they turn on updates? You can literally force the update now, right? Because it's not their choice. It's your code that's running now that forces the update. Now,
so that's the hard part. We got to manage all this complexity ourselves.
Right. So that's the complex version. So the nice thing is that there's a kind of a few companies out there that have built services that kind of basically manage all of this for you, that manage the, you know, do you want to roll it out to 5% of your customers and progressively kind of grow out?
Stage rollout.
Do you want to make it a mandatory update? If things go wrong on the client side, can I revert back to the previous version? All those kinds of outside cases. There's a couple of companies out there that have services. One of the first ones, and this is like, you know, this is me being, I'm so proud. Like Microsoft and actually my team built one of the, actually the first of those services for React Native. So, but it was actually, I want to say like 2+ years ago, Microsoft built out a service called CodePush.
Okay.
And we've been offering it free since its inception. Fortunately, it's like, I mean, I love serving React Native developers because I use it myself. It actually doesn't cost us that much to run. And like, if we can solve this problem for more developers, hey man, more power to us, right? Yeah. And so, so CodePush, essentially takes all of that and boils it down to, you know, go out, get yourself a key. We'll run the service for you. Upload the package. We'll even kind of implement security features on top of it that allow you to sign the package so that you know, like, that what you downloaded to the client is the exact same thing that got uploaded. It's legit. It's signed by this developer, right? You've got, I don't know, just a little bit more peace of mind there, right?
No, that's good.
I'm like, these days, I'm security paranoid. I've been getting more and more paranoid.
Actually the security podcast.
This is security. Yeah, security. We're about to go there, right? but anyways, so Microsoft has offered CodePush for this. And, actually one of the reasons that you and I are able to talk here today is that, we had an event just yesterday, where we announced that CodePush itself was getting rolled into a larger service.
Okay.
The larger service, takes advantage of all the cool things that CodePush allows you to do and essentially getting those updates quickly and often so you can get better learning and deliver bug fixes and features more quickly. But then marries it up to a number of other services. Again, free, for React Native developers.
Wow.
Basically continuous integration and delivery. So you can do builds on every check-in, right?
For my React Native app.
For your React Native app or your Android app for that matter. Right. We're talking about React Native, so I'll keep it on React Native for the time being, but it could be for your native Android app, right?
That's an app center, right?
That's an app center. Okay. Yep. Totally. AppCenter.ms. If anyone wants to go check it out, so that you can get, testing on devices in the cloud. So we'll run basic automated UI tests on your application, so that you can distribute it out to customers, whether it's using through CodePush or it's out to beta testers. Some of your listeners may be familiar with Hockey App.
Yeah.
And so App Center is also kind of taking Hockey App and CodePush and a number of other services and kind of marrying them all together.
Just kind of putting everything in one spot.
Yeah, totally. Okay. And so we built out React Native SDKs for all that, push notifications and a bunch of other groovy stuff. That CodePush thing, that is superpower specific to React Native developers.
So I can update my app real time. So I go, I got my React app. I want to implement this, you know, on the fly updating. I don't even know what this proper wording for it is called.
CodePush.
CodePush.
Just call it CodePush, man. Just call it a CodePush.
So when I implement this, I can just go up to App Center and then start working with the tool for free. And then at that point, I can just start getting those updates in real time.
Yeah. Yeah. And like,
what does that look like from a developer perspective though? Like, end user perspective. Let's go back to the 2.4.0 example. We upgrade to a dot release.
Okay.
So now I push that up to App Center. Okay. Next time the user's in the app and they're using it and whatever the app is. Of course, we don't want to give a bad experience. So what is App Center doing for us at that point? Do I still have to write that code that kind of hooks all that stuff together and updates? Or
so
what?
The code that you would write as a developer is essentially this. So you have a couple decision points, right? As a developer, you need to decide when you want to check for the update.
Okay. So when?
So then you want to decide how you want to expose that update to the end user. So you have a choice, some common choices. Your mileage may vary. Some common choices would be just silently update it on the next restart. Okay. Mm-hmm. So in that case, it could be completely invisible to the user.
Mm-hmm.
Another one would be, throw a dialogue and say, an update is available. Do you want to restart now? Right.
Mm-hmm.
Another one could be, on the same dialogue, you can say, update on next restart.
Okay.
So they can they know that an update is coming, but they don't get interrupted with whatever their current task is. Right.
Yeah.
I would say the last common option would be that, you actually have a page that you go to that says check for update.
Okay.
And then you electively check for update. And then it's pretty obvious.
How long do these updates take to install?
They're super quick, actually. I mean, like, again, it's always going to depend upon the size mm-hmm. of the package. So we have the ability to update basically any loose files.
Okay.
Usually when you're making an update, you're just updating JavaScript, and we'll actually do the diff to find out which files are changing. So we optimize the size of the package so that it's the smallest package possible.
Do I have to determine where those files go? Do I have to move that cache directory over?
Or no, you do none of that.
So that's all
solved. All that's managed for you. Literally, you develop your app, you build your build,
yeah. right?
You open up, the CLI. So there's a CLI for code push.
Mm-hmm.
You say, navigate to your directory, code push release. A few arguments after that,
yeah.
right? When you do that, it will upload, it'll do the diff to figure out what your, what changed.
Mm-hmm.
It will upload the package to the server,
mm-hmm.
Sign it with your certificate, right? Then when the device calls, on whatever event it was, maybe they click the check for update button. Maybe you as the developer decided to just check every 10 minutes for
yeah.
a new update, whatever. It'll pull down the package, right? It will unpack the package. So this is the service and the SDK doing it for you.
The SDK that's in my React Native app.
That's in your React Native app,
mm-hmm.
right? It will unzip it for you. It will do the work to take the old files that it knows that it's replacing, put those in local cache to the side so that it can do a, oh shit, restore
mm-hmm.
kind of thing, right? Then often, it will need to do an app restart.
Yeah.
Right.
Makes
and
sense.
So this is like, this is where you want to manage the user's expectations.
Yep.
You can go ahead and do that on app start. So it just makes the app restart feel a little bit slower.
Mm-hmm.
Usually because again, we're optimizing to change the least number of files possible. Usually it's a matter of milliseconds.
That's fantastic.
I mean, it's really fast. If you have a giant app and you're not only replacing a bunch of JavaScript, but you're also changing a bunch of loose files as well,
mm-hmm.
sure, it can take longer. And that's where you just as a developer want to be a little bit responsible.
Okay.
And we also support, for example, having multiple staged environments. So for example, if you want to, test it out in your developer feature branch and use the service there while you're doing your early testing, then you want to have a staging branch where you're distributing out to beta testers
really?
And you're testing the actual performance characteristics.
So I can kind of I could pre-release this to an internal group or to a beta group. I
oh,
can
yeah.
do that stuff too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And mm-hmm. you just have, essentially the taxonomy, I guess, that we use mm-hmm. for this or the lexicon that we use for this is that you have your key and then CodePush also has the concept of environments.
Okay. Environments make sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And so from there, you just, you kind of manage it from there.
So on the React Native side, I'm unfamiliar with building a React Native app.
Yeah.
I've just kind of touched the basic documents getting started. To integrate this into my app, is there do I put this in like a package file that tells it, hey, I'm going to use this or what is that? How do I integrate?
No, React Native, the build system takes mm-hmm. care of that for you.
Okay.
Right. So really you've just got your, when you're working in the React Native app, you're basically working, inside of your text editor of choice.
Okay.
Right. You're working in code. And then one thing that I do want to make clear. And this may have been, it's a little bit late in the podcast for this essential piece of knowledge to come up, but React Native developers, are not just React Native developers. It is really difficult to be successful as a React Native developer just writing JavaScript. React Native developers are Android developers and iOS developers who use React Native to make their job easier, to, help write less code and reduce redundancy.
Mm-hmm.
We are mobile developers who happen to use React Native as a tool in order to consolidate our code base
yeah.
and frankly get, what I personally think, and this is a matter of personal preference, right? What I personally think is a better developer experience during the kind of the iterative phase where you're, especially when you're working on UX and you're trying to tweak
yeah.
things
yeah.
and trying to do that. So one of the really great things about React Native is that, Because again, it is just JavaScript that's updating and yeah. once you've done your initial native code build, all that code that you're changing for the UX and your views and your styling, it's all JavaScript.
Oh, so that's what's being pushed over the wire, and that's yeah. why it's so fast.
That's why, exactly. So you've compiled and built to, all of your code.
Everyone's been telling me, like, oh, it's so fast. I'm like, how is this fast? Like, you have to compile it, but that makes sense.
Have to recompile it. Yeah. Okay. So when I'm, you know, shifting things around and I'm working with my flex grid and I'm mm-hmm. moving buttons around and changing my colors and even, you know, writing out different text, whatever I'm doing, right? That's all written in JavaScript. At that point, I've already done a full build. Okay. I've already done my native compile build. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm changing some text, I'm changing some colors, whatever I'm doing. And it can go ahead and just essentially the same trick that I was talking about earlier with yeah. code push.
It's what's it doing, right?
It's just doing locally, right? Instead okay. of having to go out to a server and do an update and do unpack it, it's just incrementally pushing these tiny little text changes back over okay. to the host.
This is what right? this is the information we've all, like, everybody's probably listening, wanting to hear. So this is great.
Yeah. All right. So you got that host and it's getting little tiny incremental updates. And so it's just doing a quick little refresh, uh-huh. right? And so now I can move things around. I can tinker with my logic. I can tinker with my layout. Right.
Quick save, boom, it's there. It's just pushing a small little.
Every time, control save,
doop,
right?
Doop, doop, up there.
Exactly.
So that, you know, what usually pops up at this point, and I'm sure everyone who's listening to this, driving down the road, doing dishes, whatever you're doing, you're probably wondering, and you said this before, the performance is the same, but we have the compiled code, but then we're still running JavaScript. Are we encountering some level of performance hit at this point or what?
You know, here's where I tend to, when we start talking about performance,
yeah.
I by necessity have to get really precise, right? Like, what do the tests say?
It's hard. It's really hard benchmarking.
So I'm going to go ahead and tell you, I have not run all of the tests mm-hmm. to say with precision, this is the exact hit that you get. And yeah. frankly, it's probably going to vary depending from
it's going to vary a device. It's going to vary app, like you said. Right?
What I can tell you with confidence mm-hmm. is that I've worked with enough of my own applications and enough of seen a lot of other developers' applications, right? Because I'm in the business of building developer yeah. tools. So I talk to a lot of developers. The apps that they show me, you could have laid out three in front of me and had only one of them been developed with React Native, and I would not have been able to tell the difference. I am sure that at the core of it, yes, there's probably a 1 or 2 millisecond delay somewhere or something like that. Mm-hmm. I haven't done the profiling yeah. to know 100% for sure. I can tell you that from a user experience perspective, there is no way. It's like if you had replaced library A with library B in your native Android app and they both like – change the floating point number, mm-hmm. right? You wouldn't be able to tell the difference between yeah. the two. All that you're really doing with React Native is you're leveraging a slightly different library to replace a portion of your application's okay. code.
You mind if I just pepper you with a few questions regarding React Native, just like some of like how you would do things? Would you
yeah,
mind that?
I'll do my best. Yeah.
Yeah. In regards to the performance, like you said, it's hard to kind of see what these things are unless you're rerunning numbers and it's going to vary. So anyway, are there any things that you should kind of avoid doing in React Native that you know automatically is, hey, this is bad or that's going to cause a performance issue? Or is there anything like that?
I'll refer back here to, well, really where you tend to notice performance is actually with things like animations.
Okay.
Remember I said before yeah. that Airbnb had written a great animation library for yeah. it? Perceptually a performance thing, but it's not actually a computational performance problem. It actually is more of a user experience problem with the way that state gets loaded in and the events fire off.
Okay.
So it's more like a race condition problem that is really easy to run into in React Native.
Okay.
So what I would say is be very mindful of how you are loading and unloading your components.
Okay.
Render, pre-render. They call it rendering rather okay. than loading components. Through that, make sure that you are leveraging an animation library like Airbnb's
okay.
animation library. It will help ease some of that pain. So that's my recommendation there. And again, this is not a computational thing. This is a race condition problem.
Okay. This next one's kind of like two parts here. As an Android developer, I'm used to using certain third-party libraries to do HTTP requests or to load images or to deal with whatever.
Yeah.
Do I still use those components, or is there a React version I should go look for?
If you have an Android Java component that you prefer using, continue using that one. Again, React Native developers are really Android developers that happen to replace parts of their toolchain with React Native in order to get a better kind of developer experience, in order to get to market faster, in order to reduce redundancy. You will need to code in Android Studio or wherever it is that you do a lot of your Android development, mm-hmm. And leverage native libraries. Having said that, there are often a kind of a paired version of it over on the JavaScript side that you could use if you want to migrate that code from the native code over to the JavaScript.
So here's a prime example. We're building this app. We want it to run on iOS. We want it to run on Android.
Yeah.
As an Android developer, I'm used to using a REST client in Android known as Retrofit. Okay. But that's kind of at a lower level of the application that iOS and Android is going to use.
Yeah.
Should I be using something that's specifically made for the JVM, such as Retrofit, or should I just be going and using one of the JavaScript libraries for HTTP?
For something like that, I'd probably use one of the JavaScript libraries for it. A great one to go to is Expo, Expo.js. Okay. They provide not only a lot of functional component libraries, but also UI component libraries as well. So I would say the more that you see its basic, simple functionality that is likely to be shared between iOS and Android, that's when you're going to want to go to the JavaScript side of things and use a shared library. Because again, you're trying to reduce redundancy.
Okay.
Right. If you start to get to something where it is a library that accomplishes something specific to the Android platform that you likely would not leverage in iOS, that's when I would go to the native code.
Okay. So I guess one of the good examples, or maybe it's a better question here, is let's say I was building just a video player application, right? Just to have a video site. And I want to list the videos, almost like YouTube. And then I click one and then it just plays. Now on Android, we have something called XoPlayer that's built specifically for playing videos. It works fantastic on Android. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't even know what they use on iOS. I'm sure they have something. Maybe it's built into the platform at that level. Would that be something I should probably deviate from?
For something like that, I would say that I would go to a common component unless I found that that common component had significantly different user experience characteristics or performance characteristics.
Okay.
I love JavaScript. I love the JavaScript community. It is a beautiful disaster, right?
That's a good word.
Beautiful disaster. There is widely varying quality in a lot of the components that you will find. So if you can find a good one, yes, absolutely. Okay. Where you can share it, go for it. But it is widely varying quality. And that is one of the challenges that you do have as a React Native developer, as anyone working in open source, right? Like a lot of we love it because we're able to solve progressively more difficult problems by leveraging the work of those who came before us.
Yes,
right. Definitely. We can use that open source component. Don't have to write it ourselves again. Yeah. But sometimes it doesn't do exactly what we wanted it to do.
Exactly. So it seems like the rule of thumb is check to see if there's something in JavaScript that does what you needed to do that will work. If it does and performs the way you'd like it to perform, then roll with that.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just kind of fork off from there.
Yeah.
Other question I have is a lot of things are done in mobile environments in multi-threaded fashion. What's the multi-threading situation look like in React Native, or is there one?
Service workers service workers is your answer. It's service workers essentially is the it's the way that JavaScript accomplishes multi-threading.
Okay, yeah. So look into those. Now, if I'm going to go write a React Native app after this, because there'd be a lot of people who are probably interested in it, myself included. What tools would you recommend that I go use to start writing a React app?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, good question. Okay. So if I were, several years ago, I wrote a blog post for building the best Cordova development environment. I need to go update that.
There you go.
And do another one now for React Native. You do. I haven't done that in a while. All right. So that's homework for me.
Do it on the flay home. There you
yep,
go.
Yep. So here's kind of off the top of mind. Here are the things that I put in. All right. So, you want to start with NVM. Node version manager.
Yep.
Is what that is. Then, get your latest version of Node, get your latest version of NPM, Node package manager.
Yep.
Get, React Native, package, go out and get Expo.js, go out and get, from an editor perspective, I personally prefer, VS Code. And there are a handful of extensions that you'll want to get for that. Basically just go to their, extension browser and search React Native, and you're probably pretty safe if you get like the top three.
Yeah. And I just want to put a disclaimer in here. We are at Microsoft. I am talking to someone from Microsoft. You are recommending a Microsoft product, but the disclaimer I want to add to the podcast here is a lot of my friends are JavaScript developers. A lot of them are heavy into the JavaScript environment. They are not Microsoft people at all, but they absolutely love VS Code. That's kind of one of those tools that's now like just growing in popularity. So I don't want people to think we're promoting just, hey, go use everything Microsoft. Actually, VS Code and a lot of these other things are great tools. So definitely check it out.
Yeah. I think the only two things that I mentioned that are Microsoft made today are Code Push and VS Code.
That's it. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
But I think just one of those things that some people, when they listen to some of these podcasts, are like, well, of course you're talking to so and so.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
But VS Code, I've seen it out there. I've seen tons of folks use it. It's been fantastic. So that's what you recommend for an IDE, though.
Well, it's not an IDE editor, but whatever. Yeah. Splitting hairs there a little bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's a handful of extensions, that I would go for in there. Tools for React Native is one of the top ones. There's a couple of good, component libraries that you can also get for, React Native as well, or autocomplete for component libraries.
Okay.
And then what else would I put in there? That's probably going to give you like a good start. If you're doing like your 100 level weekend project, just to try out this and see what it's all about. And then like, of course, don't forget, you are still going to need everything that you would need for normal Android development, right? So you still
need SDK
the SDKs and all that stuff.
Okay.
So set up your machine as if you were setting it up for Android development and then add these extra things.
For iOS, do I need to go download something particular for iOS to get
on? It's the same workload. You just need to, you know, have Xcode, right?
Xcode and all this stuff.
All that good stuff on there, right? Okay. But like really you should think about React Native not as replacing any of your Android development. It's another tool in your toolbox in order to reduce redundancy when you're going to multiple platforms and have what I think is a better development experience when you're iterating, particularly on UX and UI.
Which is kind of a good segue into the last question I really have here. We had talked about having two different, you have the iOS and the Android file, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say for some reason, I don't really care about having two different UI looks right now. I just want to share the same one. Do I have to do anything different or I just kind of leave it how it is and it renders on both?
No, basically what you'll do is, and I've done this in a couple of demos just to make things simple for folks. Take your index.ios.js and your index.android.js. And import a common component. Mm-hmm. And that common component just becomes just your renders. View.
Okay. Just renders everything.
Yeah. And like the amazing thing is that even when you do that, because you're calling all of the native components, the native controls, it often will still end up looking, smelling, tasting, feeling like a native application. Granted, a fairly rudimentary one usually because you're not going to do anything too fancy with it.
Yep.
But it's still all native UI. And so it will feel at least not foreign in the context.
Makes sense.
It just may not feel as polished.
Okay. I think that's all the questions that I have.
Yeah, dude.
Thanks, Ryan. I really appreciate you coming up.
Brilliant. I really, really appreciate you inviting me by. Super fun. I can't wait till it comes out and, I can't wait to actually hear questions from folks online. If anyone like wants to, like if you're running into problems and you need some help, find me on Twitter. I'm at Ryan J. Salva on Twitter and GitHub and everywhere else.
We'll add links to the show notes for that. And so if anyone does have any problems with App Center or wants to talk to you about, hey, just push some stuff out through React and the tools that you've built,
I can
hit you up there. Again, thanks for coming on the show. We hope you have an enjoyable rest of your trip.
Rock and roll, man. Happy coding, y'all.
Thank you.
Once again, we want to thank Mapbox for sponsoring this episode of Fragmented. Mapbox handles location so we can focus on building our apps. With their simple APIs, they provide the easiest way to build a customizable map experience in your Android app. Head on over to mapbox.com/android. The first 50,000 unique mobile users are free, so you can try it out to your heart's content. After that, it's a very reasonable pay-as-you-go model. Once again, that's mapbox.com/android. Thank you for sponsoring today's show, Mapbox.